Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT news team.
And welcome to... Oh, there's the outro. Look at that. The shortest Talk of the Rock episode ever.
Already running into technical issues.
This is what happens when Terry's out of town, right? Hi, welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host this week, Jared Griffin. And we have a news, a special news roundup edition of Talk of the Rock this week. We do this a few times a year just to talk to the news team. Talk about Kodiak News, talk about their stories and their process. Every news cycle presents its own different kinds of challenges and insights. And so this is us kind of teaching our audience a little bit more about news and how it's made, and just to kind of reflect a little bit on what's been going on. So in the studio with me are Brian Venois, KMXT News reporter, and KMXT News director Kirsten Dobroth. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi.
All right. So this is also special because this is Kirsten Dobroth's, maybe not Kirsten's last Talk of the Rock, but last week as news director here at KMXT. So Kirsten will be doing a lot of the talking.
Oh, good.
I imagine today. Right. And then we will have a special, I'm going to cap you off at like 5 minutes of Women's World Cup soccer.
Yes.
We have a lot to talk about in terms of Women's World Cup soccer. You have changed the character of the station over the past couple of weeks with your obsession, healthy obsession with Women's World Cup soccer. So, well, let's just go ahead and start off talking about the elephant in the room. Kirsten, what's next for you?
Very bittersweet. I am staying in Kodiak, which is the exciting part of this, but I was offered a job to write for Undercurrent News, which is a commercial fishing seafood industry magazine. One of those things that kind of pops up when you're not really anticipating it, and one of those opportunities that the more I learned about it, seemed like it would be a really cool one. So I'm staying in Kodiak and I'll be writing for them, but this is my last week as news director and at KMXT. I'll still be helping out in the newsroom and, you know, giving some guidance and edits and filing radio stories kind of freelance. I have something coming out for Alaska Public Media's public affairs program, Alaska Insight, this fall. So people will still hear and see and hear things that I'm doing, but won't be every day, and they won't hear my voice. Maybe for the best at the 5 o'clock newscast.
that's right. Plus the newscast. So our last news roundup was back in April. So it's been, you know, 4 months, 4 months or so. So, what have been the biggest news stories for you two over the past few months? And there have been some big stories.
Yeah, I mean, last month was kind of crazy. There was a back-to-back weekends of breaking news. Obviously, that was a really sad plane crash that we did have to cover, and that was, weekend that was pretty tough to cover. That was probably one of the biggest things that we were talking about. And then, you know, we also, most people around the community probably know about the tsunami warning that we had that one weekend too. That was, had us all in the station pretty late at night, and we're just like, oh, right, we're working, we're writing these scripts in the middle of the night. And those were probably the two biggest things that we covered in the last couple months. Especially, I think a lot of people were curious, oh no, what do I do?
Yeah, I think we had a stretch in there in July that Brian and I worked 3 weekends, 3 weeks straight just with breaking news, which is, you know, as breaking news is something you're always kind of prepared for and know can happen. But to have it kind of different, especially different things happening 3 weeks in a row, was pretty unique. At that point, I had told the station that I was leaving. So some news God guru was making me really work for it and earn it.
We were worried that you weren't going to get a tsunami.
I know. Alarm we were before talking you left about the station. That. We yeah. were literally talking about that, and then it happened. So
that was actually another thing that I was also worried about. I was like, oh no, I haven't had to do breaking news on my own. What if something happens? And then immediately I was like, oh shoot, I'm coming to work now.
Yeah.
Well, let's walk through the breaking news kind of process, because I think maybe that term might be overused a lot today. I see it on social media.
It is.
Every
it
time
is.
There's a news story and it's the first time somebody has posted this news story, they'll put in all caps, right, breaking in front of it. But that's not necessarily breaking news.
No, I mean, I think breaking news is something that has a unique urgency for the community to know about. For instance, I'm going to throw a media organization under the bus, but the newspaper in Vail where I used to work, or I didn't work at the newspaper, but I lived in Vail, Colorado for a long time. They tend to use breaking news for when certain skiers win races. I wouldn't say that's breaking news.
It's news, and it
deserves, you know, a quick turnaround. But, you know, breaking news, I think, has its own urgency and importance for the community. Obviously, when something, you know, a fatal plane crash happens, which is, it impacts different community members, that is urgent and important for the community. A tsunami, obviously, has its own importance. And then you kind of go through it. There's different things you do to go through it to cover that.
And so, Brian, this wasn't your first time doing breaking news, but...
Yeah. So before I came to Kodiak, I was working for KDLG in Dillingham, and there were a couple of times I was working for breaking news there, but it's just being in a whole new community is just, like, trying to figure out, like, oh, okay, so what are the values that I need to be taking on right now? Who are the contacts that I need to be talking to? Because I am still new to the community. I haven't been here for a full year yet. I only got here in November, so it's just kind of having Kirsten around and having that practice of being like, oh, this is an emergency. I need to come into work. I need to start writing. And like having that guidance from her has just been super, super helpful in my growth as a journalist, and also just to feel a little bit more confident in what I am putting out when I do call people to do these interviews. So
I'm like the air traffic control in those situations.
Yeah.
That's what I like to liken it to.
And I'm the panicked passenger who's like, oh, I just got commandeered to land this thing.
Yeah, tsunami warning. But yeah, no, it's good practice. You know, every journalist, you don't ever want to do breaking news, but everybody has to do it. And it's hard because in breaking news, every situation requires different type of coverage, different types of follow-ups. It's so hard to write like a breaking news guide, mm-hmm. because everything, you know, it might be one story that warrants a specific type of coverage and reach out, you know, you're reaching out to specific people to get information. Something like a tsunami where you're getting different information or a tsunami warning where you're getting information on the fly and having to update is a totally different situation. So it's definitely, the more you do it and the more you're put in those situations, particularly in different areas, the better you get at it. But it's never perfect, I would say.
Oh, exactly. You know, the thing about the term breaking, it sounds just so like firm, but when I hear breaking news, it's like it's a fog. You get contradictory information, you get incomplete information, and you're trying to put something cohesive together for listeners, for news consumers. That's the difficult part.
Right. And I think one thing that's also worth clarifying in all of this is, you know, especially when there's breaking news situations going on, so much gets circulated on social media in particular. And one of our jobs is to reach out to people with firsthand knowledge of things or authorities who are releasing information. We don't go off of speculation, you know, and that's something that's useful for news consumers to look at as you look at different media outlets. Who are they citing as sources? And there's also, you know, as journalists, one of our jobs is to not do harm to people. Our job is to objectively tell what we learn. And so there are certain things that we have to wait for authorities to confirm or to tell us details, because we don't want to be the ones that are telling a family member something that they don't know yet. That's not our jobs. Our jobs is to confirm things with authorities and tell the public on based on that information as we receive it.
And speaking of authority, Kirsten, over the past 6 months or so, you've become quite the news authority on crab. Tana crab, snow crab. You're all over. Tell us where these your following of the crab fishery stories, where that's taken you over just the past few months.
It is funny. You know, who knew? Colorado kid, crabs would be my calling. Well, it's one of my first stories when I got here was that the Tanner crab fishery was reopening and fishermen were getting record prices. This was last year. The $8, I think it worked out to be $8.30 or something like that per pound. It was over $8 per pound. And then fast forward to this winter, in between then, the snow crab collapse, which of course part of the fleet is based here in Kodiak. And I started following that. And then the Tanner crab opening this year with this huge amount of crab and the low prices and the fleet standing down. And it's just kind of been something that, I don't know, maybe it's just my timing in Kodiak that I'm on like a crab cycle here that I just coincided with. But it is funny. We like to joke here that that's been my main beat has been crabs.
Has been crab.
Yeah.
It's taking you to statewide coverage and even national, the national spotlight too. For
yeah.
your crab coverage.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting. I had a story on the PBS NewsHour and a few radio programs. And you know, I think crab fishermen, I think there's such a pride among crab fishermen with that fishery. And I think that it's something that creates a lot of intrigue for people who don't live in fishing communities. And it's a big one, too. It's a big livelihood for a lot of people. So it's good to see that nationally, the fishing industry here in Alaska is getting attention in other parts of the country.
This was also a big year for on the education beat, which has kind of been Brian's beat for the most part. New superintendent, budget, Yuzinki School, right? Finding a new teacher, schools closing, schools perhaps opening.
Yeah, there's the evacuation in December too. That was quite a bit of a fright at a North Star.
That was one of your
right.
first stories.
I think you were. That was like your first week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like my first or second week. I think it was maybe the first or second story that I put out with you guys. And it's just been, you know, I got my degree in music education, so education was obviously a big part of that. So that was something that I was really glad that I got to cover. Yeah, and covering the most recent thing was, just looking at the Karlik School. They just went viral for trying to get that started back up. Apparently they've been going through applications and reaching out to people. That's something that I'm going to have to verify before we actually go on and put something and make something out of that. But yeah, that'll be something that we'll be looking forward to and following over the next couple of months. School will be starting up soon. I'll probably be doing a check-in with some students or the superintendent again soon just to keep education on everyone's mind, because that is a really important part of any community is the schools.
Especially with the attention the budget cuts have gotten and how that's going to work out in the years to come, this year to come and in the following years to come.
Yeah, that's something I talked to Dr. Mika about with the most recent thing is that it's really scary. It's really hard for schools to look at all these budget cuts and think like, well, we've cut as many positions as we can without doing layoffs. We've budgeted as hard as we can. And that's something Dr. Mika has iterated to me multiple times. Like, it's tougher and tougher to keep going without having a consistent, without their budgets coming from the state, at least keeping up with inflation.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the Karlik situation, so not breaking news, but what is it like to cover a story that has gone viral, internationally viral?
Yeah, that was just something that kind of...
And you were talking about verifying things and...
Yeah, just we were... When I heard about it, well, I saw it on Facebook for the first time and I was just like, oh, there's no way that's real. Because, you know, you get... You grow up thinking, like, okay, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And then, and I'm sure there are caveats to it. Like, I don't know the exact details of the family that would be coming. I don't know exactly what they're paying for, but I just didn't believe it. So I just kind of disregarded it for a while. It started just like popping off and getting bigger and bigger. And I was just like, okay, hold on. So Kirsten and I sat down and talked about it. And then I just made the quick call to on the phone number that was on the thing. And I was just like, hey, I was just wondering if this is real. I was like, oh yeah, it's real. And yes, I think almost 5,000 people, or maybe it passed that by now. It's just like thousands of people responded. And out of that, how many more actually saw the ad? They had responses from the Philippines, from Canada, all across the U.S. thinking just like, oh yeah, we could just do this. And they're like, well, it's real. We offered for it. We didn't know if anyone would be interested. Holy cow, people are interested. And that was kind of the breaking story there for just as it kept getting bigger and bigger. I think it even got covered by like the Washington Post, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
They picked it up.
And that's been, I've been involved with Kodiak News or KMXT in one way or another over the past 17 years. And I can't really remember a spate of like, 4 to 6 months where Kodiak almost, it seems like every other week is in national or international or in some kind of viral news cycle. It's been really interesting.
I think that part of it is there's always this intrigue about Alaska that I think gets people like, you hear about stories, A, there's not enough journalists in Alaska. So, you know, there's always this intrigue. Like, you hear these little things like, you know, somebody sees a flyer that a village in Alaska is looking for families to reopen their school. And of course, there's going to be intrigue around it. But I also think it's really important to point out that there's really important things that happen here, and there's not enough journalists to cover it. Mm-hmm. And when you have journalists that are able to cover those things, they get attention. And a lot of times those things need attention. And just a plug for local journalism mm-hmm. there, that we have a team that was also able to cover that story. And I think we're really proud of that.
Yeah. And it's also really fun. Sometimes one of my more popular stories recently was just a Bear 480 Otis woke up at Katmai.
Otis.
A lot of people.
Team Otis.
Yes.
A lot of people responded to that post. And I was just like, oh yeah, it's just a fun little piece about like, oh yeah, this bear that I like that I watch on live stream cams. And then that one got picked up by Alaska Public Media, and it kind of popped off on Instagram for a little while. I was like, wow, this is just getting a lot of views. I was not expecting that for just a short story about a semi-popular bear that just happened to have a name.
Semi-popular bear.
Well, those are like news nerds and news analyst nerds. You know, people are we're seeing that audiences are experiencing news fatigue more and more, and so that's why stories like Otis and stories like Karluk, which is like this underdog, you know, kind of story, people are really attaching themselves to read and to follow. So following up on that Otis story, what have been some of the biggest stories for you personally that you found?
Me? Are you looking at me? Okay. Personally, I I covered agriculture in Colorado. That was something I reported on a lot. And I think it's one thing that's really made me really interested in commercial fishing and fisheries here, and covering that is this is how we feed people, and climate change makes that harder. And I think it's something that's incredibly important. I did a story this year on the food hub on the island, the community farms in the villages. And I think that's just for Alaska, for the lower 48, that's such a unique thing. That's actually what I'm doing my Alaska Insight episode on, which will be a video, like a television show in early October. That really stood out for me. The story I just filed last week on Danny Harmon from Woody Island, the soldier who the armory is renamed after. I was really moved by that story and the community effort to keep his memory alive. Maybe I'm getting a bit whimsical here thinking back, but I can't, I just really appreciate over the last almost 2 years now, all the people that have shared their stories with me and been willing to talk to me, because I think it's really represented the community in our coverage. And I've been really proud of all the stories we've put out. I think we've done a lot to get in touch with the villages and increase our coverage there to talk more about fisheries. I think there was a time when we didn't cover fisheries enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that all of that has been really impactful for me in different ways.
Yeah, I think for me, the first story that kind of popped into my head was actually one that I wrote for the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report last summer. There's sort of a rivalry between Chignecks and Area M, and that gets to be a hot topic for a lot of people. And what I've noticed in a lot of coverage is that a lot of people talk to the folks in Chignecks because they're kind of right between us here at KMXT and over in the station in Dillingham. So they have some coverage, whereas like Area M, the communities out there like Sandpoint, they don't get a lot of coverage. And I think, as Kirsten said about like covering a lot of the villages, it's really hard for them because they become sort of a news desert where they don't have consistent reporters there to talk about the current events, the big things that are going on. So that was one of the big stories that I was really proud of from last year. Looking more into my coverage from this year, though, another one was the Yuzinki School. We talked a little bit about education earlier. They went most of the year without having a full-time, consistent mm-hmm. teacher in the classroom. They had a rotation of a few adults who were going out to the village to work with those kids as much as they could, but it's really, really hard to be in a school where you don't have an adult that you can count as like, oh yeah, I'm going to see Mr. Smith every day. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really hard on the kids. I was glad that I was able to shed some light on the situation there. I'm glad that they do have a teacher coming for this fall. So those were some of the bigger ones that I was thinking of. And, you know, I had another one on the tip of my tongue, but I'm just kind of blanking on it right now.
I know, I kind of blanked too.
I'll give us about, one more minute before we get into World Cup soccer. So, Kirsten, your last week, was there anything that you weren't able to accomplish that was on like your bucket list?
Everything. I think.
Well, so you got Peltola, you got Murkowski, right?
And Sullivan.
And Sullivan.
I've interviewed the congressional delegation.
Yeah.
I think for me, and anyone who's worked with me and known me, I'm very goal oriented and maybe a recovering perfectionist. and I think that I think the bittersweet thing for me is that I feel like there's still a lot I can do here, and I'm hoping that being a presence in the newsroom, even if I'm not full time, I'll be able to contribute in some way. In some ways, you know, just keeping us on that path. I know Brian's going to do a great job, and just offering my help where I can. But yeah, you know, I think I've really enjoyed working here. I love radio; it's my passion, and I'm hoping I can still. Even though I'm going to be, you know, deep in the reporting on Alaska's fisheries, I'll still be able to file some stories that maybe I didn't feel like I had the bandwidth before, having to cover all the things all the time and host. But yeah, I think there's always a general direction you try and point things in when you take over. And I think I started pushing us in that direction that I think we've become a really trusted part of the Alaska Public Radio Network. We've been able to have our reporting on national pretty frequently. I think that we've hired Brian, who's a great reporter and is just a great asset to have in the newsroom, and those are all great steps in the right direction.
I will also add that Kirsten has been such a great boss, too.
To make me cry, guys.
It's been really nice that she lets me leave on afternoons sometimes when it's sunny out with our
Sunshine Liberty, yes.
Exactly.
With our rare Alaska sun this summer.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's just been really great to have you, Kirsten, as a mentor the last several months. I feel like I've grown a ton as a reporter under you. I've learned a ton from you. I'm going to keep learning a ton from you, let's be honest. I'm going to be texting you all the time.
Oh, I'll be here. We keep joking that the first Monday that I don't work here, everyone's going to show up and I will be at my desk. Just like, hey, guys.
Not even. okay, so Kirsten, soccer. Okay. I promised you that we would give you some time to talk about Women's World Cup soccer.
Should I pull out and, my soapbox?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Kirsten does at least one little thing every day, demonstrating what offsides means to us, giving us the rundown, the tea on all of these national teams. But okay, so what's your impression so far?
Okay.
What's going on?
Okay.
What's going on?
I'll take everyone up to speed in case they haven't been watching. Hopefully they have. This is the 2023 Women's World Cup, the biggest soccer event that happens every 4 years. And obviously, I think what's dominated the headlines was that the U.S. women's national team was bounced from the tournament just at the beginning of the round of 16, which is pretty crazy considering that they've dominated women's soccer for the last 30 years. But I think it's really worth noting.
It's worth noting that Jared
that
exact scenario.
So I, Saturday morning, maybe too much, sent a group text to the station. telling everybody they had to tell me their picks, filling them in with some. They've heard a lot about this tournament through me. I have a list of everybody's pick for who's going to win up on the wall. But no, you know, I think one of the things that's really worth noting about this tournament and should be exciting for the future is that this is the biggest Women's World Cup yet. There are 32 teams that are in this tournament. That's the same size as the men's tournament, the first year that it's been that big. And by the round of 16, three of the top 10 teams in the world did not make it through the group stage.
Wow.
And then in the round of 16, the U.S. women's national team also didn't make it through. And I think that's really great because in the long run, that just is telling of the amount of talent that's out there, the amount of funding that's going into women's soccer programs. The group stage used to be kind of a throwaway round. There were maybe like four or five teams that just dominated and blew everybody out. And now you have teams like, you know, the Philippines in the group stage that had never been to a World Cup before, that not only came to this World Cup, but they beat one of the host countries on, I'd say, one of the top 10 goals in the tournament. This wasn't like a fluke goal. So I think that even though it's disappointing that the U.S. women's national team, sorry if that was a spoiler for anyone that hasn't been paying attention, yeah. I'm
too,
reflecting
too
on
bad.
That. I think it's super encouraging for the future of women's soccer. I think it's great for women's sports. There's still a lot of inequalities out there between the women's and the men's game, but it's a great push forward.
And where are we at right now? We're at the semifinals.
Quarterfinals.
We're at the quarterfinal stage. Eight teams left.
Yep, eight teams left. They just finished the round of 16 early this morning, our time. So right now we have Netherlands, Sweden, England, France. I'm going off the top of my head here.
Australia, Japan.
Australia, which is one of the host nations. It's in Australia, New Zealand this year.
Colombia, too.
Colombia, yep. They move forward. So there are some really great teams out there. If you haven't watched soccer before, I really recommend watching it. It's, you know, it's really competitive. It's a fun game to watch. If you have daughters, you know, it's a great opportunity for them to see women playing a sport at a really high level in sold out stadiums.
Yeah, I'm not typically a soccer viewer, but this has been an amazing tournament. I'm watching teams and countries that I never would have. You know, usually I follow U.S. through whatever tournament, and then when they're done, I'm done. But no, the drama is fantastic.
Yeah, I have to say, too, I know we're running short on time, but I have to say, I grew up playing soccer. I was 11 years old watching the 1999 World Cup team in my living room. The impression that made on me as a kid, I think, was incredibly formative in my life. And to see the game get as big as it is with so many great teams, I think is just super encouraging. And it's a great tournament. And if you had, like I said, if you haven't been watching, now is when the competition really heats up. The teams are really good.
Oh, now it does.
Now
oh,
it
wow.
does. I know it's just going to get better. So it's a great time to start watching. Even though the games are at kind of tough times, you can always watch the replays.
Wow. Okay. So I guess we better wrap up. Thanks for listening to Talk of the Rock News Roundup with reporter Brian Benoit and outgoing news director, but always somewhat present. Because she just lives down the block, Kirsten Dobroth. thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.